There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. This is our daily podcast bringing together the best bits of today's show, Thursday, November the 7th.
Life in plastic, it's fantastic. Well, that may have cut the mustard 20 years ago, but not so much in 2019. Majid Al-Futtaim joining many organisations who want to get rid of single-use plastics.
It's just been this massive letter signed by thousands of scientists overnight, talking about the need to act now on the planet. So we're going to get Majid Al-Futtaim in to talk about what I think we can fairly say from a company in the UAE, from a private company, is probably the most far-reaching pledge we've seen so far. Not to take, by the way, anything away from the businesses that we have seen do a huge amount already. Jumeirah Restaurants obviously have been very active on single-use plastics. Freedom Pizza really led the charge on the whole straw shaming sort of thing. But just for sheer scale, Majid Al-Futtaim, with nearly 300 supermarkets, nearly 50 cinemas, and the biggie, 26 shopping malls. From sheer size alone, what they have to do here is quite a challenge. And so we're going to find out exactly how they're going to do it.
The trick will be not so much in outlets that Majid Al-Futtaim owns and controls themselves. And you made this point about Vox Cinemas. When I buy my nachos at the moment, they come in a plastic tray with a plastic lid. And there's some nachos in one bit of the tray and salsa in another and so on. They could quite easily, because they control it, change that to recycled cardboard in a few weeks' time. But what are they going to do for the hundreds of tenants they've got who they don't control, who they essentially just lease out space to Zara? Carrefour, of course, they control, but to so many, particularly of the apparel or toy retailers or all these organisations that just cover all of their goods in oodles of plastic and paper packaging.
Look, one of the things that's going to help with that is actually going to be time. So Majid Al-Futtaim's pledged to do this in phases over the next 5 years, effectively, so by 2025. A lot of those retailers are going to be under public pressure and shareholder pressure to reduce the use of single-use plastics in that time frame anyway. So a lot of those goals are going to align. But yeah, absolutely. What's Majid Al-Futtaim going to do to anyone not willing to make the move? Does that mean you don't rent them a mall space in this kind of retail environment? I'm not so sure.
I don't think it really matters whether or not they meet their target. The fact they're doing this in such an ambitious way, I think that's the key thing. You know, they can always point to the fact they've done it, they've tried, and even if the timeline slips a bit, that doesn't really matter. They've got the headlines at the moment, which is in a way it's important for them. You want to slap your credentials down the table before other people get there, and you know, they're getting the kudos at the moment. They're getting the pats on the back for trying. If it slips by a year or two, I mean, at least you're on the right path and you're doing it. I think that's the key thing.
Lots of people have been in touch about this one. Ashin has an idea on how everyone can stop using plastic bags in supermarket. Here it is.
The biggest problem with the recyclable bags is remembering to bring it across to the store, even if you've got it in the car. And I think what the retailers could actually do is hold somewhat of a credit system, so you maybe buy like 10 bags. And then when you bought the bags, you maybe use two, and you hold the balance as a credit with them. And anytime you need to come in, you then utilize those bags. You then go back, and you can even bring them back, and then, you know, increase your credit, thereby also allowing somewhat of a recycling system between people. So it's not necessarily every person needs to own a recycle bag. You own this credit, and then everybody works within that shared sort of system.
Well, it's an innovative idea. It is one of the challenges, isn't it? Remembering to take it with you. I guess you just have to get into the habit, though, don't you?
We've tried, haven't we? We've tried. And the question is, you know, Hattie was saying, well, put it back in your car straight away. It's the question of it's almost the last 100-metre delivery, isn't it? You've got to get it from the car into the shop. If you don't, what do? Buy another one? I've got masses of these things that I've bought in countries all over the world that I've I've got it in the back of my car at the moment. But remembering to take it to the supermarket is a different thing.
But you would. If it became, you know, if it became not an option, you absolutely would. Because you can change your habits. I mean, you know, they're not fixed.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
Good.
We've also heard from Ian, who says that the UAE should learn from one country in Africa.
Okay, I was recently in Kenya, surprised that when I entered my hotel, I couldn't get a plastic bottle of water anywhere. Everything's glass, recyclable glass, and the government, I understand, has cancelled all plastic orders, all single-use plastic, right throughout the country, which is amazing. Having travelled to Nigeria, where there's plastic everywhere, the place is infected with it. There's not a single piece of plastic on the streets of Nairobi.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Life in plastic, not so fantastic for Majid Al Futtaim. One of our big stories of this week is that the retail giant has pledged to get rid of single-use plastic across all of its operations in the next 5 years. We are joined now by Hani Weiss, who is CEO of Majid Al Futtaim Retail. Hani, it's lovely to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you've really caught our imagination here on the Business Breakfast, because when we're talking about Majid Al Futtaim, we're talking about 26 malls, we're talking about nearly 300 supermarkets or hyperstores,
yeah.
46 cinemas, 13 hotels. I mean, this is a massive pledge. Where's it come from?
Okay, so let me start just by stating a few facts about the plastics impact on the environment, and then I will come to the pledge. So today, according to the UN Environment Programme, says that the plastic industry will skyrocket over the coming 10 to 15 years. And while it is highly durable, easy to produce, suitable for mass production, it's creating one of the planet's largest ecological challenges to date. In fact, today, according to the report of UN Environment Programme, of the World and the World Economic Forum, we create 350 million tons of plastics, 17% to meet our region's demand here. That's equivalent, actually, the weight of the entire human population every year. On that outstanding figure, the same report noted that only 9% of the plastics we use have been recycled, 12% incinerated, and the rest, 79%, goes into landfill, and 8 million tons end up in the rivers. And just one second here, when it goes to the rivers, in fact, it goes there and it stays there. And on average, every human being is eating roughly 5 grams of plastics a week, which means equal to the 80 ATM card every 7 days.
Tasty.
Absolutely.
All of those stats there kind of add up to an argument against supermarkets. We shouldn't have any supermarkets. We should grow our own and eat it fresh.
No, well, in fact, we should have a supermarket, but a supermarket that has a vision like Majid Al Futtaim, which is sustainability is at the core of everything they do. And here I'm talking not only about the supermarket, I'm talking about the shopping malls, our cinemas, every business at Majid Al Futtaim Retail. But specifically for the Carrefour operation, for the retailers, we pledge to eliminate and in phase-out approach all the single use of plastics in the coming 5 years.
So when we're talking about Carrefour and single-use plastics, what are we actually talking about? We're talking obviously about plastic bags, but what else within the supermarket environment?
Absolutely. So we are talking about the plastic bags at the cash counter. We are talking about all the phone trays, the butchery, fishery, and the delicatessen counter. We are talking about all the cling films. We are talking about all the net also that comes with the fruits and vegetables. The only thing that we are excluding currently is the plastic packaging on shelves that been bought by our customers and we brought them from our suppliers. But here, we have a great commitment also to work closely with our partners, our suppliers, in order for them to start thinking how they can eliminate the packagings on shelves.
So how are you going to do that? I mean, yeah, fair enough. You can't get hold of Nestle and Mars and everyone else and tell them that you're not going to stock them unless they change. What are you going to replace all of the items that you've just named with?
Okay, so I just want to say one thing, that Majid Al Futtaim has started this, move 10 years back. This is not new. However, through our study, we have found out that customers are ready, or at least 50% of the customers said they are ready to walk out if they don't find the plastic bags. So this is here, there is a really education and awareness program that we'll need to work on closely with our partners, our customers, and our employees. At the cash counters, we have already all the recyclable bags, the sustainable bags. We have also, this is already exist, and we have them on our cash counters. On the fruit and vegetables, I just show you the small bags that we have, mm-hmm. which is really made of sustainable cloth, that we're going to offer it to our customers. The same thing on the foam trays, and this all will be replaced by a sustainable material. In fact, in one of our stores, or actually more of our stores today, we have bags made out of skin of potato, and all plant-based actually bags already available in our stores. One of our stores actually offering carton for our employees at the for our customers at the cash counter in order for them to put their stuff in a carton and take it back home. So we are really thinking of each and every replacement in a very sustainable manner.
So I understood originally that you were just going to not do plastic bags. But did I hear you correctly that you are going to stop selling products like cling film?
We are not going to sell products like cling film. What we are going to do is we are going to stop using cling film in any of our products.
Uh-huh, so you will still sell it?
Yeah.
You're that ethical, why don't you stop selling things
exactly.
like that?
Exactly. This is what I said a couple of days back. What we need to do is that we start work closely with our partners, suppliers, to stop all this kind of plastics and have it replaced by different sustainable material. And I really ask here today all our all the other retailers to follow this step and come together with us in order for us to work closely with our partners and one day probably to say to our suppliers, we are not going to place your items on shelves if you don't have it, you know, replacing the plastics by sustainable materials.
We're getting a lot of questions in for you, honey. We're going to get to them in a second. We know that there are obvious alternatives for, you know, the trays, the cartons you get at Deli's.
Absolutely.
And all the rest of it. What, though, are you going to use instead of cling film over delis and meat and fish and the rest of it?
So there are a lot of other materials today. Mainly we are going to focus on plant-based material. Okay, there are many of them. So we have seen that there is a retailer somewhere in the world that using the banana leaves, for instance, you know, to wrap their products, to wrap the fish, the meat, and so on. So this is the way that we are thinking of our business, using only sustainable material and plant-based material.
Honey Weiss, CEO of Majid Al Futtaim Retail, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The people making the headlines today.
Starting with Masayoshi Son of SoftBank.
Yeah, the boss of SoftBank has admitted poor judgment in relation to its investment in WeWork after reporting its first quarterly loss in 14 years. They've written down the value of their investments into the US-managed firm WeWork, as well as, of course, their Uber investment as well. It hasn't done too well. They recently agreed to rescue WeWork in a $10 billion deal. They're going to pay $1.7 billion to Newman, who set up the company, Adam Newman. And this is Masayoshi Son talking about his investment into WeWork and why originally he thought it was such a good idea.
Let's hear from him now explaining the rationale behind that.
While you are increasing productivity and excitement, at the same time, cost of the office expense goes down on the average like 40%. So from CFO point of view and CEO point of view, it's great to have 40% reduction in cost. And at the same time, employees' satisfaction of the workplace increased dramatically, like 30% increase in happiness of working place. It's beauty in both sides.
Well, it was beauty in both sides for him a few months ago. Yesterday, he said, my judgment around WeWork was not right in many ways. He said, I overestimated Adam Newman's good side. I should have known better. I turned a blind eye to Adam Newman's bad side on things like corporate governance, and I have learnt a harsh lesson from my experience with Adam Newman. And although they've paid him at 1.7, actually, Newman actually retains a stake in WeWork and will stay on the company as an observer. Not on the board, not official position, but he's there as an observer. Observer, which is probably just some sort of nicety to keep Adam Newman involved in some way and to stop him demanding more money, I would imagine. Mr. Son said that although SoftBank was in rough sea, WeWork itself is not a sinking boat, because of course they still got this massive investment in the company. They want it to succeed. But he's now sort of held his hand up in true Japanese style and said, I was wrong.
How's that going to go down in Abu Dhabi and Riyadh, two of the biggest investors in the SoftBank Vision Fund?
If you think his judgment may be called into perspective through the other big investment into Uber as well, which hasn't done very well since it floated. I mean, then you've got to suddenly start asking wider questions about Masayoshi Son's judgment and, of course, the whole management team over at SoftBank. It's not a good look. But he's done the right thing, I think, in holding his hand up and sincerely saying, I was wrong. I misjudged Adam Newman.
And being held up by everyone as being quite an unusual thing to do.
That, yeah.
Reminds me of the story last week that came out of the big meeting in Riyadh, the FII, that he was speaking to an empty room last week. A year ago, he was the hero, wasn't he? SoftBank Vision Fund, we're investing in this, that, and the other. This year, dear.
He also got criticised because he appeared to doze off on stage. I don't know if you saw that bit, did you?
I didn't know.
No, they criticised him because he actually looked like he was asleep at one point when he was in a panel.
That's not a good look.
It's easy to do, to be fair.
Exactly.
To be fair, I've dozed off, and well, I've dozed off listening to a lot. I haven't dozed off sitting on stage, but my sympathies are with him on that one.
Yeah. Brandy Scott, you're looking at the WhatsApp story.
Do you know what? I am looking at the WhatsApp story, which is the comments that have come out from the executive director of the UAE's National Electronic Security Authority, suggesting that we could see an okay on WhatsApp calls here. Now, we're going to have more on that shortly, we're going to be speaking to a lawyer about it, finding out exactly the legalities around internet phone calls. But it's not the only WhatsApp story out there this morning.
Because?
There is another, which is that WhatsApp globally is introducing new privacy settings. In fact, they're already out there. They've released them into the wild for iPhone and Android users to stop people adding you to group chats without permission.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing.
Isn't it? Is there anything worse than the WhatsApp group chat, I ask you? Oh. How many do you belong to?
We're planning brunch next Friday, and there's 17 people in a WhatsApp group chat.
What, just for a brunch?
Oh, all kinds of nonsense.
I'm on two.
Yeah, I'm on a couple of work ones, and I've actually extricated myself from most social-related WhatsApp chats.
Oh, I'm the first one to leave. There are a few work ones as well, I suppose.
Can't do it. They are giving you different privacy settings so that you can basically, not so much opt out, but you have to accept an invitation in. So you can't just suddenly find yourself part of a WhatsApp group and find that you've got 47 messages of people saying, can't do Tuesday, oh, I can't do Wednesday, how about Chinese? And then you get all the messages again every time someone leaves the group.
Yeah, the strange thing about these groups is that when there's an exciting topic and everyone's talking, you get ping, 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 ping. And then, of course, a lot of people type one line at a time and send. One line, send. Ping, 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 ping.
Hello.
It's
ping.
Very annoying.
How are you? Yeah. Ping.
I know. And then someone says, yeah, I'm not feeling well. And then 37 people are like, oh, no.
Ping.
Exactly.
You guys don't know you're born because you have never been exposed to the WhatsApp group for a school class.
Yeah, this is true.
Oh, dear. And then you've got 25 people all being very polite. What's homework this weekend? Someone sends the homework. 24 message. Thanks. Thumbs up. Smiley
face. The parents
face,
or the children
clap,
doing
clap,
this,
clap.
By the way?
All the parents.
Really?
Yes.
Why would the parents care what the homework is? Don't the children know?
Not at our age. Yeah, when they're teenagers, you'd hope
you're not old enough to know what your homework is.
No, our Muppet, 6-year-old, 9-year-old, frankly, barely tie their own shoelaces, let alone do their own homework.
Oh, there you go. WhatsApp. We'll be discussing whether or not we could see WhatsApp calling, but for the moment, they do now have settings where you can control whether or not people can add you to groups without your say so.
My newsmaker this morning is Sheikh Khalifa, His Highness the President of the UAE, who, as we've been hearing, has been elected for another term. It is pretty much 15 years to the day since he became the president. Do you remember? Here's a question, because it was the 3rd of November 2014 he became president, of course, on the sad death of Sheikh Zayed. Do you remember where you were when Sheikh Zayed passed away? I know exactly where I was.
I know where I was living, because I was in my flat at the time.
Yeah.
I don't. Which is a surprise. I should do.
Yeah, you've got a very keen sense of history. I was in Emirates Towers, at an establishment there, with some people, and I can absolutely see us. And, you know, sitting around kind of stunned because they turned the music off and it's like,
it was
wow.
A JFK moment. Yeah,
it kind of was a little bit. Yeah. It kind of was. But then Sheikh Khalifa succeeded him. And looking at the, with the Business Breakfast, so looking at the economics under His Highness the President Sheikh Khalifa, and they're astonishing because the UAE back in 2014 was already a pretty strong booming economy, wasn't it? I mean, it's not this old 1974, I moved here and you had to get a Land Rover driving to Abu Dhabi. You know, it was a big city. You know, Emirates Towers was there. Burj Al Arab was there. You know, the shopping malls were there. The highways were there. But when he took over, GDP was just under 500 billion dirhams. And today it's 1.5 trillion. And that is some legacy over 15 years economically. I had no idea the economy would have grown that much. From what is not a particularly low base in 2004, quite a high base.
And the oil price hasn't been consistently higher since then either.
It's really yo-yoed. I'm looking, when he took over in late 2004, the oil price was not far from where it is now. It's about $60-odd dollars a barrel, $64-ish dollars a barrel, pretty much where it is today. And it's been up to a peak of, you know, we all remember $145 a barrel back in 2008 and the troughs of $28 back in early 2015, and now we're back at $60-ish dollars a barrel. So the oil prices, you know, he's had good years and bad years. But you've had, you know, the economic reforms. You've had so much that's gone right, haven't you? And it's been an incredible legacy. So we're His Highness Sheikh Khalifa, my newsmaker today, tripling the UAE economy.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Getting a little bit more detail now about one of our top stories, certainly something that's going to have people talking today. The question whether or not the UAE could be coming close to lifting the ban on WhatsApp calls. We have had comments from Mohammed Al-Kuwaiti, Executive Director of the UAE's National Electronic Security Authority. This is he speaking to CNBC.
The collaboration now happening with WhatsApp is actually increased. And we're working in many of those as well as collaborating with them here in UAE. And many of those we saw actually a very good understanding of the concept that we have. There might be a lift of that ban if it's for the voice calls or for the broadcasting of many of the things that they do. And this is going to happen soon. And this is what we know and understand from the Telecommunication Regulatory Authority here in UAE.
We have reached out to the TRA here on the Business Breakfast. I'm joined now on the line by Eamon Holly, who is a partner at the law firm DLA Piper. Eamon, it's lovely to speak to you. Thanks for joining us. Do you want to remind us what the law here actually says about internet phone calls at the moment?
The telecoms law itself doesn't say anything about internet calls per se. It just discusses why and how you can provide telecommunication services generally. And for that, you need a license, a telecoms license issued by the TRA. Now, currently, it hasn't issued licenses to the VoIP services, such as WhatsApp, etc. But equally, the TRA has said that it hasn't banned VoIP services. But if you use an illegal, unlicensed service, you might be committing a crime. So it's a little bit contorted, but basically you shouldn't be using an unlicensed voice service in the UAE, including VoIP services, until they're licensed.
Which includes the popular ones that we might know from elsewhere, like Skype and WhatsApp calls.
Correct, yeah. So what the TRA has said is that it hasn't actively blocked any applications like this, but has left it up to the operators to decide what they'll allow on their network. So currently, as we all know and experience, we can't use voice services on these apps, but we can use messaging. So Mr. Al-Kuwaiti's statement is interesting, but equally it didn't sound very committal at the moment. So we'll wait and see what the TRA has in mind.
And this is, of course, something that regulators around the world have been dealing with, not just things like internet calls, but regulation around a number of areas of business that the internet is changing.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, VoIP stands for Voice over Internet Protocol, but it's really just another service over the internet. and it's a disruptor. It's disrupted voice services over the net, just like other services are now disrupting other industries. So, for example, Careem and Uber disrupting booking of transport, certain services disrupting retail, like Noon, for example, being able to buy services products over the net, etc. So this raises some challenges for people or industries and sectors that haven't traditionally had to worry about these things, including the regulators. So they're thinking about things like consumer protection, how do they tax these things if they can, whether or not these services over the net should comply with local laws, etc. And so what we're seeing is that those issues now being transferred from the telecom sphere into other spheres, for example, medicine or even automotive.
And telecoms around the world are having to come to grips in general with less call revenue, people leaving each other voice messages, sending each other, well, WhatsApp messages and the like. How globally are they doing that?
So it's varied, and I think it depends on the market and the size of the market, how operators are able to deal with it. So traditionally, telcos would make money by charging people for voice services. But as people move on to data packages and then start using services like voice over IP or video over IP and other chat services, they're using data and not voice minutes for this. And so the revenues that the telcos are receiving is flatter. And that's interesting because they need to allow people to use the data to use these products because people want to, but it might mean quite often that there's less revenue coming to them, which they need to reinvest into the network to be able to build the great networks that you need to have the data. So it's a bit of a conundrum and a bit of a downward spiral. But what you're seeing in some industries, some countries, is more innovative packages and bundling of packages to keep people on a network. And we're seeing the same thing here.
Eamon, 2 seconds. What will you be watching to hear or see next?
I expect that the TRA might be coming up with some innovative policies in the near future. We just have to wait and see, though.
Eamon Holley, partner at the law firm DLA Piper.
Thanks for listening. We're back Sunday, 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.